from the rugged desert outside Yuma, Arizona. This is Outpost Outspoken. Outpost Outspoken is the official podcast of U.S. Army Yuma Proving Ground, which conducts natural environment testing of military equipment in Arizona, Alaska, and the tropics.
Welcome, I'm your host for this episode, Anna Henderson. Today, Lieutenant Colonel Shane Deering joins us. He has served as the commander for Yuma Test Center since 2022 and will change command in July of 2024. Thank you for being here, sir.
Good to be here.
Now, as I mentioned, you have been leading YTC for the last 2 years. But before we talk about your time here, let's talk a little bit about what led you here. You joined the Army in 2004 and went through officer candidate school at Fort Benning, Georgia. What first interested you in the Army?
Most of the folks I grew up with, or a large percentage of them from my high school, would join the military of some sort, either the reserves, the Navy, the Army. So we had a cohort of friends, and me and about seven of my buddies joined the Army Reserves between our junior and senior in high school. And so that was my first experience in the Army, which later I stayed in the Reserves during college. And then when I graduated and I started work as an accountant, that's when I realized I need to go experience being a platoon leader. And I need to get active duty. I need to scratch that itch because I'll regret not ever doing it. So that's when I applied to OCS, got accepted, and came in 2004 as a commissioned officer.
So just 1 year after completing that engineer officer basic course, you were deployed to Iraq in 2005. What was your role there?
So I came to the unit as soon as they came back from OIF-1. And from then we trained to deploy again in October 2005. I was a platoon leader, and then I was a support platoon leader. And then by the time deployment came around, I was an executive officer for a company. So kind of the second command for a company commander. And then we deployed to Tikrit, Iraq. The unit primarily focused on route clearance. As an XO, I did more personal security detachment and logistics for the company. And then came back and then went to the engineer officer captain's course.
From business school to a conflict just within years. So after you went to Iraq, you also were deployed to South Korea and Afghanistan. When you enlist in the military, is deploying something that you just kind of expect?
So in 2001, I was still in the reserves, so I knew deployment was a reality before joining, which was something that you wanted to do. It was a challenge you wanted to take on, especially as a platoon leader. During that time period in the Army, we knew it was going to be persistent conflict for a few years. Didn't quite know it would extend as long as it did, but we were very conscious, very aware of what was ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. Throughout all this time, you were continuing your education, and by 2012, you had completed the Engineer Captain's Career Course and joined the Acquisition Corps. So explain what that corps is.
Okay, so the Army has basic branches, infantry, engineer, artillery, logistics, that you get commissioned in, and you go to the officer basic course, and you learn that trade, that skill, that tradecraft. Sometime after company command, there is a window that officers can voluntarily choose a career field designation or a functional area. These are very technical. Comptroller, which is like budget and execution. Acquisition is one. IT has its own functional area. And I was teaching at the Captain's Career Course, and I got an email. Back then, acquisition was 6 months ahead of the other functional areas, so they had their own separate board. And I had met a friend there at Fort Leonard Wood, and he was a acquisition member. And so I talked to him. I was like, you know, I'm going to put in for this. I have a business background anyway. So I just kind of very, in almost a lazy manner, put the email together, replied, said, yeah, I'm all in. And it wasn't 3 or 4 months later, I got an email saying, hey, welcome. You're part of the acquisition corps. We know when you can go to school. And so I took the acquisition basic course down at Redstone Arsenal. 2012, about a 4.5 month course. Back then, they combined the program management element and the contracting, the test, all in one course. I think they have it separated now. I had looked at functional areas for some time if I was going to continue my career in the Army, and so it was just luck that it came on when it did, and I was finished with command when I was, and here I am.
So that was kind of a transition period in your career because you hold a bachelor's in accounting from the University of Oklahoma. It seemed like you kind of did that full circle, went back to what you started with.
Yeah, it is. So in the operational Army, it's a way of thinking. When you're in garrison, you're very calendar-driven, training calendar-driven. So the the command gets to sit there, put a calendar out for 2 years, and decide what we're going to do. When you go into acquisition, you're customer-driven and funding-driven. So I don't have a calendar that I can move events around because training is the number one thing. We don't train. We actually execute. We produce. We test. We procure. So it's a different mindset. And so making that transition, because I'd spent some years in the accounting world, understanding the reimbursable side of the Army, helped a great bit.
Mm-hmm. And then in 2022, you became the commander of Yuma Test Center. Was that a choice? Do you get to choose?
Yes.
How did that come about?
Yuma was the number one test center in my list. There's a lot of things when you put that list together. It's the job, the challenge, the reputation. But then you also have to think location, family. All that is in your kind of how you weigh the different positions that you have. I had worked at DAC, and the one of the general officers over at DAC had been at WISTAC before and at WISMR. And he had told me, he said, hey, that Yuma job, it was the best job in test. And so I looked at it a little bit and pulled the MTO out from FMS Web and saw how large it was and everything else. So I put it as the number one test center. And the list came out, and I got it. So I was thrilled.
You stepped into the position on the heels of COVID. Most public events had been canceled, yet testing never stopped at YTC. What was it like for you as a commander, knowing you were responsible for the workforce during a pandemic?
By the time I got here, the Yuma community had kind of worked its way into a battle rhythm around both COVID, and at that time, the awkwardness was coming out of COVID. You know, how do we get back to normal? And at what speed, what pace do we get back to normal? But a lot of that was set before I got here. And some of it has to do with the workforce that is really testing out in the environment so much. So they don't have the same concerns as an office building centric organization that you might have back east. So it was easier than it sounds. I'm not going to say it was easy, but I had it better here than maybe folks in a DC area or on the East Coast.
Correct, because at that time, YPG was able to transition anybody that worked in an office into a remote environment. And like you said, most of the employees on the testing side are working outdoors. Talk to us about the importance of testing at YTC. Why was it so important that they continued the work?
So the Army, and really DOD, does a great job of getting right equipment at the right place at the right time. Even though internally we complain about timelines and everything else, I was the benefactor of the MRAPs. I was in Iraq and Afghanistan when the RG-31s had to come out, when the crew devices were coming out, and they were coming out extremely quickly at that time. So I benefited from ATEC's work, and so I understand how important it is what they do. They save lives. They get kit out to the soldiers, the warfighter, and it helps them have a technical overmatch. But it also protects them. And I saw it firsthand in Iraq. I had actually worked with ATEC as a captain, kind of in an accidental way. I had tried to order some gunner protective kits. The colonel from ATEC contacted me and said, hey, those have not been tested yet. You can't use those. You can use these. And that was kind of my first introduction to ATEC, even though I hadn't been in acquisition yet. So having benefited from it, I can translate that now to what we do. Hey, here's how important it is what you do. There's going to be a soldier in this seat. We can't have fumes. We got to know the vibration. We have to know the complex stuff like human systems integration. Can a soldier handle three nets at one time talking, a FIPR text on a Blue Force tracker, and be a gunner or a TC? Those are things that we have to find out here through either DT or OT before that gets released to the field.
DT and OT, tell us what that means.
So DT is primarily what we do here, or left of DT. And that means this munition, this item, this technology is not mature enough yet to be rendered safe to go into an operational test situation. So we're really just testing the item, not how it operates within a maneuver force or force on force. It's just, does the round go from here to here? What does it do at termination? What does it do when it leaves the cannon, and so on? And we also fix a lot of stuff. So what we do here is inherently dangerous because accidents happen. Now, we have a very rigid safety process, and we mitigate these things. And we do it successfully. The workforce here is great that they've been doing it for years. They have some of the most advanced systems in place to do this, and they're all rare and unique to the work that we do. So DT is a lot more dangerous than OT, I think. But I find DT more interesting because I'm seeing stuff from a maturity level that it's almost at the science and technology level. It's not even weaponized. Yes, there's no nomenclature. And so we're seeing something that's going to be fielded in 7 years.
It's a very raw.
Yes. And we do DT, but we also do what I would say is left of DT, which is experimentation, prototyping, demonstrations, non-evaluated work. A lot of our work is in that area. It just falls into the label of DT.
You had mentioned the workforce, and it's a couple of unique things about people here. One is we have a lot of veterans working here. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people that, like you, have maybe used some of these older iterations of a product when they were out serving or didn't have it and are probably excited to get it out there fielded. And there was something else that you had mentioned about the workforce is their dedication of time and service.
Yes, we have a unique workforce here. Some of it is regionally based. Some of it's cultural. Somehow YPG and YTC has been able to retain talent. And I say that relative to other places. We have grown expertise, organizational expertise, individual expertise that doesn't exist elsewhere because somehow a person on average stays here longer than they may at another test center in Aberdeen or another acquisition billet in D.C. It doesn't sound like much until you get here and you can see the growth of the organization and their capabilities and how we do stuff. I don't see it anywhere else that I've been in acquisition where we've been able to retain the kind of talent that we have here. And it makes the job more enjoyable. It makes it, you know, in a way easier. We have our own challenges, but that part is unique here, and I hope they keep it.
Oh, yeah. Having those subject matter experts that have been on, you know, on a program for 2-3 decades and know the ins and outs of it is, I'm sure, just extremely valuable.
It is. And just like with the, you know, when we were doing IRCA, we have a cohort of folks who did Crusader. So they know the history. They know how these things get built up, how they are developed, what decisions the large army has to make at times when you have scarce resources. So just a ton of experience here. It's probably been one of the top few things that makes YTC unique.
Something else that you found interesting and unique was the Yuma community involvement. Tell me about that.
Yes. So before I got here, it's something that, as you're coming on, people say, right? But everywhere you go, someone says, oh, the community's great. The community's great. It's almost intimidating when you start getting here, and it's at the individual level. I'll be at the store. Somebody will know me and say, hey, you know, I like what you do out there. Thanks for coming to Yuma. Are you settled in? That's something that happens more here than I've ever seen. And then the community leaders get involved. You know, we have the mayor that likes to come out and get involved, city council members. It's intimidating, but it's so welcoming when you're new here. And you know, I'm talking to my replacement now, and I'm trying to explain to him. He's going through the same thing I went through 2 years ago. Yeah, you're just telling me this. But he'll see it on the day of change of command. He will notice the Yuma community is different. They are intense, and they support the military. They support our mission out here. And it's just a great welcoming feeling when you're new.
You're definitely invested in our success.
Yes.
And your success as a commander. So speaking of your role as a commander, 2 years mm-hmm. is not the typical time. Most of the time it is 3 years. So you're leaving a little bit early, but it is for a great reason. So, you know, tell the workforce and the community why you're heading out a little early.
Yeah. So last fall, me and the wife, who I'm a geo bachelor, so my wife was working at Whismur at the time.
Which is White Sands, New Mexico.
Correct. So mm-hmm. New Mexico, where I came from before I came here. And then she later took a job in D.C. But last fall, we found out we were going to have a child, which wasn't totally unplanned or anything. But we first worked to, could we find her either a position in the area or a remote position. And we tried that for about 2 months, but we were not successful. So I socialized the idea and found out that the command would support a curtailment as long as I did 24 months. Kevin Hicks is coming in. He said, yes, I'll come in a year early. He was excited. His family's here now. So it all worked out.
Any message you want to give out to the workforce and the community, you know, before you head out in July?
Yeah, I don't think I can thank them enough. But beyond that, keep what you have here. Don't lose sight of how good you have it. I have a unique perspective because I've been other places. But if you've been here 8 years, you may not know how good you have it here. How the organizational competencies here, you just don't have in other places. You have very little attrition-driven problems here at YTC. In fact, probably none. It's unique in that the culture here is great. When someone asked me what makes Yuma different, and it's one of my friends in the military, he's like, well, out here in the desert, if there's a piece of trash blowing, a Yuma employee's going to pick it up because they're proud of their area. If you're in another place on the East Coast, you won't pick it up because there's so many people that need to pick it up. You'd be picking up trash all day long. It's just a different in your pride and in your local area and stuff that they have here that's kind of unique. But, I mean, my message to them would be, hey, keep what you have. Hold on to it. Enjoy it. And if you want to get out and see the rest of the acquisition world, go do it, and you'll have a better perspective of what you have here.
I think that's great advice and a great message to our workforce. So what's next for you?
So I'll be PCSing to Aberdeen. I'll be taking a position within the Army Evaluation Command. More than likely, I'll be kind of doing special initiatives for the SES there. They may have me as an acquisition advisor. And there I'll wait for some boards to come back to see if I'm going to Senior Serve College, to see if I'm getting promoted and so on. So spend a year or two in Aberdeen and see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. It was a pleasure to work with you these last 2 years, and thank you for sitting down with us and talking to me and the workforce and the community before you head out. And we wish you and your family the best in your next endeavor.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for your time.
This has been Outpost Outspoken. Thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time from the forefront of Army transformation.